This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Childhood lead poisoning can have devastating effects on virtually every system of the developing body. The number of older houses in West Virginia puts residents at high risk for exposure. Carol Lofton reports that numbers show the Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention Program is working, yet no money exists for remediation.
She's going to use that for lead.
Toddlers are playing on Kelly Rindle Swan's living room floor in Ohio County, one of the highest risk counties for childhood lead poisoning in West Virginia. For the most part, they seem happy. And healthy. But one of the toddlers, a boy belonging to Kelly's younger brother Danny, has been poisoned, even though he exhibits no symptoms at this time. The culprit? Lead.
The bottom line is we should have, there should be no lead in blood.
That's Rao Gupta, West Virginia's Commissioner of Public Health.
This is one of those silent diseases that unless tested, which can lead to long-term memory impairment, behavioral and emotional challenges for the child.
The most common way children are exposed to lead is from the lead-based paint almost universally found in homes built before 1980, which is about 70% of West Virginia homes. Lead-based paint was outlawed in 1978. When the paint deteriorates and chips, dust particles that can be inhaled or even eaten are released. Think slobbery teething toy on the floor next to a baseboard covered in lead-based paint. Commissioner Gupta is one of several health officials tracking the West Virginia Childhood Lead Prevention Program, which tests and monitors children under the age of 6 for elevated blood levels and provides medical care when necessary. It seems to be making a difference. From 1997 to 2013, elevated blood lead levels in children under the age of 6 has dropped from 2.26% to 0.37% of the screened population. Last year, the CDC redefined acceptable blood lead levels as 5 micrograms per deciliter. When Danny Swan's son Ciro was screened earlier this year, his levels were a 19.
Our house was bought as a fixer-upper. It wasn't really move-in ready. So renovations have been ongoing and are currently ongoing while we live in the house.
When he turned 1, the Swans took Ciro in for a routine checkup and blood lead level screening.
19 is, it's not considered lead poisoning to the point where they'll bring you to the hospital and do blood chelation, but it is high enough that it's, you know, red alerts. And they sent us legally they were required to notify the state, and the state sent us a specialist to come test our house and figure out where the lead was coming from and provide us with recommendations.
Upon hearing the results of the test, Danny immediately took 2 weeks off from work and recruited friends and family for cleaning parties. He also began sealing off any possibility of lead in the third floor of their house. He calls this place a safe zone for his son. He talks about the process of a state lead tester coming to their home.
She found in our house what she basically already knew because she's tested so many houses, and that's that all the woodwork had been painted with a lead-based enamel. And also everything on the exterior of the house.
She explained that the lead-based paint used to be the best paint available. It was incredibly durable, and so it was used to cover interior woodwork and anything on the outside of the house.
That's problematic because your woodwork is the stuff that's constantly abraded. You have wooden windows that are sliding up and down, so you have paint dust kind of coming off of them all the time. Doors where they rub on the top of the door against the door jamb. And then the exterior of the house obviously tends to chip a lot anywhere that it's exposed to weather. So you have lead paint in the most problematic places.
In some West Virginia counties, as many as 86% of the homes were built before 1980, according to the 2000 U.S. Census. Poverty compounds exposure risk. Fixing paint is expensive.
We were so fortunate to have the time and resources to address the problem, and the problems were relatively small and easy to deal with.
That's Danny's older sister, Kelly. About 4 years ago, when her third child was 15 months old, her daughter's blood lead levels also tested high, though not nearly as high as Ciro's. In both Danny and Kelly's cases, family and friends rallied, contributing time and resources to clean and fix potential sources of contamination. Commissioner Gupta said no government funds are available for remediation in West Virginia.
so many families who even shy away from having their kids tested because they're terrified that they won't be able to fix the problems because of the expense, especially. That's a big issue with older homes.
So. Kelly's daughter, Laurel, is now almost 5. Within a few weeks of initial diagnosis, her levels had dropped to within normal ranges. She shows no signs that she once was exposed to the toxin. Sarah was retested 2 months after the initial exam. His levels had dropped to a 14. Remember, ideally, a child's levels are below 5. That was in October. He will continue to be tested in the coming months. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Kara Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from the Benedum Foundation. This is West Virginia Morning at 7:49. Variable cloudiness today, with temperatures ranging from the mid-50s into the low 60s. Becoming mostly cloudy tonight with some patchy fog, lows in the 40s. Cloudy skies tomorrow, there's a slight chance of light rain to the north. Continued warm, with daytime highs tomorrow in the upper 50s to the mid-60s. The outlook for Saturday, clearing skies with highs in the 60s to low 70s.
Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by the West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Employer services at wvdrs.org.
Most of us are familiar with the iconic male pouch tobacco signs often seen painted on barns across the country. Not many, however, know that the barn painting advertisements began here in West Virginia. Chuck Klein has this story about the Wheeling-based tobacco company behind Male Pouch Tobacco.
Stuart Block is the former president of the Male Pouch Company in Wheeling, West Virginia. His grandfather was one of the two Block brothers that founded the company in 1879. The brothers had a dry goods store on Main Street in Wheeling. As a side business, they made cigars in a loft above the store.
In the course of making the cigars, they had all these clippings. They didn't really know what to do with them, so they packaged up the clippings from the cigar business to create a new brand type of chewing tobacco. And they flavored it with molasses and licorice and so forth.
And they had to come up with a name. Back in the late 1800s, one of the highlights in the day of the life was getting mail. People in Wheeling would line up on the banks of the Ohio River, anticipating the arrival of the mail pouch bag. The Block brothers took the popular thought and ran with it as the name for their new product, Mail Pouch Tobacco. And the Ohio River had one other major impact on the Block brothers' business.
We had a big flood in 1886, I think. Flooded out the downstairs in the dry goods store. The cigar making was okay upstairs, so they bought a sugar mill down on 40th Street and transferred the tobacco end of the business, but got out of the dry goods business. And the company moved to its current location, where there are still 160 people working, making chewing tobacco and stuff.
Many people believe the key to the mail pouch success was the advertising. It was in the early 1900s when Stuart Block's grandfather, Jess Block, came up with the idea to advertise on barns along highways. Signs can still be seen today in 39 states.
Farmers were interested in having their barn painted, and we were interested in putting up the famous mail pouch barn sign, treat yourself to the best. Crews were organized to paint the barn signs, and an individual was hired to lease the space from the farmer. We got a cut rate, I think, for the advertising cost, because in the beginning, we paid the farmer with an annual subscription of the Saturday Evening Post or Collier's. Most of your listeners probably don't even know those magazines, but they were popular then. Life magazine was another one. And then in the later years, we paid cash for the space.
The Ohio Valley's industry helped drive the chewing tobacco market. In the steel mills, coal mines, and in the oil and gas industries, workers could not smoke, so they chewed mail pouch tobacco instead. When the oil and gas workers moved to the fields out west, the barn paintings followed. Of course, everything was hand-painted in those days, and the most famous mail pouch painter by far was Harley Warrick. For 55 years, he painted or retouched over 20,000 mail pouch signs.
He was remarkable in that he could paint those signs by himself. He'd put a sling up on top of the roof, stand on it, pull it up, paint it, lower it. It's remarkable. He painted the mail pouch sign at a World's Fair. He painted them in restaurants. He painted them for individuals who want them in their rec room. He painted a lot of signs. And he was a very gregarious guy. So he always enjoyed talking to the farmers where he was painting the signs. And he'd be back about every 3 years, 3 to 4 years, and renew his acquaintances with the farmers. And it was an existence that he really enjoyed. I did learn the other day that in the beginning, the barn painters would take their families with them in the summer, and they'd camp with their kids and their wife while they painted signs in that area, and then they'd move on.
In 1965, the Federal Beautification Act sought to restrict the vast number of local advertisements that were being placed near highways.
All federal highways required that billboards be removed. Well, mail pouch signs were on federal highways in many, many places. So I contacted our Senator Jennings Randolph and suggested that maybe mail pouch barn signs were a part of Americana that should be preserved. And he agreed.
Senator Randolph did manage to get the barn paintings exempt. After the Highway Beautification Act, just about all other sign painters went out of business. Yet Harley Warrick continued to paint and retouch older mail pouch signs on the back roads until his retirement in 1991. Yet most of the mail pouch barn paintings were again left untouched, cited as pieces of historical Americana. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chuck Klein.
And there's a map detailing all the mail pouch tobacco barn signs that still exist. It's on our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director this morning is Chuck Anselevich. I'm Beth Voorhees.